Calvin, I'd like to ask you a question in this exploration of your work. And basically, I'd like to connect up to what you have explained earlier about how you had to find out about this different way of thinking, and also about the ways that others can get to understand it. And in a way, I'd like to make this personal on my behalf, because I ran into your work and I realized that I have, let's say, 5 light years to catch up with. You have done these wonderful books, and I know that I have to sort of look through them without looking into them first, so that my unconscious mind can start to grasp the concepts and the ideas. And I know that then, just as in learning a new language, my other mind will get me ready to understand it. I learned that when I was in foreign countries, and I realized that it was not about studying and learning the other language, but being immersed into it, and then the mind sort of flips around to it.
The immersion is the important part.
So in a way, I'd like to get something like a flip switch where others too can come to grasp your ideas and get into your understanding from the other end. You've already realized that what you got to know basically turned out to be the opposite of what you had been taught. That, of course, is the case for anybody who dives into what you have found. And in that sense, what you've written is also the end result of a trail. And what I'd like to explore with you today is, let's call it exploring the unknown and doing the undone. Is it possible to create a trail, a pathway, tiny Tim's pebbles, where others can get into what you've been doing? And for myself, I realized that I really needed those interviews we did on Who Are You? How did your quest start? What did you find? And how can others use it? Because that gives me a general mindset of how you look at it. And I also know that my next step will be that I need to do the hands-on playing with the triangles and the tetrahedra as you did, so that my body can show me how it works, just as it happened for you.
Yeah, that'll let your mind slowly become educated to what's really going on, as opposed to what you think's going on. Because in all honesty, even with the illustrations I did, when I first started drawing the triangles, the results I was getting was completely opposite and foreign to what I thought would happen, just through simple rotations and flipping the triangles themselves. There was a steep learning curve involved in what I call spatial awareness as to what happens when you flip or rotate a triangle. It sounds simple and everybody goes, yeah, that's easy to do, it'll do this. The reality is they do some pretty strange things at times. It comes out to be quite counterintuitive. But as you say, by printing out the templates, cutting them out, building the models, flipping the triangles, and working through all the different shapes that they can make, slowly the brain starts to adjust to it. And as I mentioned before, you get to a point where you can intuitively begin, when people talk mathematically about what's happening in a physical interaction, you can see the geometries rather than listen to the equations, and you know what is and is not possible geometrically. And that gets rid of a lot of the problems that occur in the math. You don't have to stop and look at each part of the equation to try and figure out what's going on and what it relates to. When you get your brain around it, being able to visualize things happening geometrically is so much faster. It's very much intuitive, is probably the best word, because in a split second, you can imagine what's happening when energy is added to a system and how it changes the system and interactions that occur. If you try and write that down in equations, you end up with a page or two pages of equations, all interrelated, and none of it being very intuitive. So the difficult part is, as you say, as I mentioned earlier, tetrionics is a bottom-up approach. We start at the very basics of physics, which is the equilateral triangle, and we build everything in physics, everything in the universe, from that equilateral triangle. That's all we start with, and that's all we use. Whereas modern science is built on our perspective of the universe, looking down to the quantum level. So as we can't see it, we've had to make assumptions, we've done measurements and observations and worked out the math to give us the same answers as what we observe in these measurements and experiments, without truly understanding what it was that was occurring at that level. And that's what tetrionics does. It fills in that blank. It says, geometrically, this is what's happening, to give us the math and to give us the results. So when you go up, your brain adjusts to it all, and you become familiar with exactly how these shapes interact and how, what they look like when they translate or flip, rotate, you find that it becomes a very quick, it's just like when somebody learns a second language. Initially, when you're learning it, you're constantly saying or thinking what you want to say in your original language and then translating it before you speak. Once you've immersed yourself and learned the second language, you don't tend to do that. You just think and speak in the foreign language. And that's really what's going on. I do a lot of physics these days, and I don't do the math. If I need the math at the end to prove a point to explain it to somebody, I'll do it. But I can get much quicker answers and do much more detailed work just using the geometry. And that's where it ties back into teaching this geometry to children at an early stage. Because the quicker you learn it and become familiar with it, and the less of what I call the established assumptions of modern science getting into your head, the less of that occurs, the more proficient you'll be, obviously. It's just like saying, well, if you're going to live in Germany your entire life, why bother learning English before you learn German? If you're never going to use English again in your life, it seems counterproductive to first raise your child speaking English and then say, well, now we're going to teach you German. Just teach them German and that's it. And it's very much the same thing. It's not a case of replacing the math with geometry. It's just simply that the math is describing the geometry. So if you use the geometry rather than the math, you'll get the same results, but you'll get it way faster. Picture paints 1,000 words, if you like, or 1,000 images.
There's a bridge which you have built, which for many people is difficult to follow because in a way they find themselves on the other side of the river. You started with the physics that people know, but then you rethought the logic of it and discovered that you were able to do something like getting the acorn, getting the oak back into the acorn. While everybody's still talking about the oak, you point at the acorn and says, this is where it all starts. Just plant this and everything will all unfold by itself. People who are still working with the oak, they cannot do that. When they bury the oak will die. So there is a need for a translation, going to an interpretation where people can actually see that they need to let go of what they know in order to be able to get in touch with what you show. Like you said, as in learning a second language, many people go to a language course and then they learn to do the phrase in the other language. And they don't do it in a way that a newborn baby does it. A newborn baby is surrounded by the language. They don't think about it. They just assimilate it, absorb it, and take it on. And for what you do and what I'm trying to do for your work and with your work on the Science of Life website is basically that starting point. Okay, let's dive into it. But maybe it helps to get a stairway, first a door to get into the bathroom, the swimming room, and then a ladder to go into the water. For me, your life story is that kind of doorway that I realize, yes, this is a different reality, and my other mind can understand this, so it knows it can let go of what I know. And with the templates, I know that that will work for me as those stairs to go into the water. After that, evidently, I will have to discover that my body already knows how to swim if I just let it happen.
It's a leap of faith. And unfortunately, the more educated you are, the greater that leap of faith has to be before you trust what I'm saying geometrically works and matches up with what you've been taught mathematically. I'm sure you've heard many a time people, when you've asked them, how does gravity work? If you ask a professor, he'll say, I can explain it, but first you have to learn tensor mathematics and relativity and Riemannian curvature and curved space-time, and it'll be too complex for you to understand. And that to me just sets off alarm bells. Science happens every day, everywhere around us. Physics, chemistry, biology. It happens without supercomputers in the electrons, as Feynman says. It happens in amoeba, where there is no brain or central nervous system with our level of intelligence to say it should turn towards the light or move left or right to get its food. So at the most fundamental basis of science, there has to be a process at work that enables all these complex interactions that we see on our level of the universe to occur, not only spontaneously, but automatically, without conscious thought driving it. Conscious thought will come into it where decisions and actions are required to be made, but for the greater part, the entire universe occurs on automatic pilot. And that's that. Even to a mathematician who loves to say that the maths is the language of science, is a very counterintuitive statement. They know that the theory of everything should be very simple and easy to understand, but what they write on their pages with the equations is far from that, because they're trying to explain all the interactions from our observation of the mechanics at work without any understanding of what's going on at that level. Whereas my approach says, here's the geometry, it can only interact in certain ways, and these interactions give us the physics of the universe that we model with the math. The leap of faith comes in that the mathematician who spent 4 or 8 years learning the math has to be willing to say, I can sweep aside mathematics I've learned and the rigorous way that it operates, and I can see the underlying mechanics in terms of geometry. And so long, and I say to them, take that leap of faith, because if you do that and follow my geometry, you will get the same end results. For the large part, there are corrections, but for the large part, you'll get the same answers as what your mathematics says is what we observe. And that means that it works, because the geometry gives rise to the math. The math, mathematicians, as I said, like the quote as being the source of all physics. Well, it's not. It's our language to describe physics. It's an invented human construct of symbols and rules that dictates how things can interact and how they can evolve over time. The geometry is what's giving rise to that mathematics. So as you've heard in the other discussions we've had, while mathematics may be the language of science and physics, its grammar is geometry. Geometry sets the rules. Geometry is the underlying cause, and it's geometry that you've got to learn and be willing to hold on to at the expense of math. Because ultimately, the geometry doesn't change. Whether I call a shape a triangle and you call it a three-sided wobbegong makes no difference. An alien will call it something else, but we will all agree on the shape, the geometric shape of that wobbegong. The mathematics will be completely different between everybody. We can all have different ways. We can call them polygons, we can call them triangles, three-sided objects, three-sided planes, many different names. But the shape that comes out from whether you're using math or geometry to describe it will always be the same. And that's the underlying universal truth. If you want to communicate with advanced life forms that know physics and have civilizations hundreds of thousands of years more advanced than us, they'll talk to us with shapes, not with mathematics. Because for them to talk to us in our math requires them to learn our math. And they've got no interest. Their understanding is way more advanced. They're looking for somebody who can draw a triangle the way I draw triangles and explain how they relate to squared energy levels, how odd numbers are bosons, even numbers are photons, and where probability mechanics come from in geometry. But the biggest problem we've got is the reliance on math without this understanding, because you've got to take that leap at some stage. It's all right for me to say, here's all my work, here's how it all fits together. But until the individual that's looking at my work is willing to put aside what they know of physics, so far as we must use math or whatever process they want to use, and follow my work from its beginnings right through, they're going to struggle. They're going to have this irrational war being waged in their head. I've been taught this, and he's saying I have to learn this other language, which is only just geometry. But they'll find that by making the models, they can learn this language very quick, and they'll seek their own mathematics and what they've been taught showing up and coming out of the geometry in ways that they can interpret. And let's also remember that every individual on this planet is unique. We all have different mental maps. Somebody will explain how to make a cake to a group of people, and everyone in that group will go off and make a cake slightly differently. They will end up with the same cake within a small margin of variation, but everyone will make it a different way. And that's the same thing with learning mathematics. You all have different mental models of what this mathematics is telling you, which is where we get black holes and wormholes and fusion and all sorts of erroneous ideas, uncertain principles. All these things crop up because somebody's interpretation of physics, and more importantly of the mathematics and what you can do with the mathematics, is different to somebody else's. So we have peer review to check that somebody's crazy out their idea makes sense to a whole group of people. Then we say, well, if it makes sense and we can't disprove it, everyone's happy with it, it shows us something that we didn't know, we should accept it as science. Unfortunately, by taking the top-up approach with geometry, it appears that I may have gone too far. And my idea is just too much of a system shock. And the consequence of that is it is just going to take longer for it to be an overnight sensation and a great discovery. It may even be the case that it'll occur and be discovered as a great underlying theory of everything after my death. In many cases where scientists die before their work is recognized for the brilliance that it is. Because we are fighting not only established ideas in math, I'm fighting the professors with what they know and what they base their entire academic careers on, saying this is how it works. I'm fighting that. I'm fighting the students who are desperately trying to make sense of what their professors are teaching them, listening to what I'm saying, and at the same time trying to get a passing grade, which is ultimately based on how well they repeat what their professors say. So while I get lots of students saying this, thank you, you've suddenly made sense of things that I couldn't comprehend in my physics and chemistry courses, these same students also realize that if they use my work and give a better explanation of what they've been, or what's happening to what compared to what they've been taught, they'll get an F. The teacher will not understand or accept the answer they've given, even though it explains it better and in a more coherent way. But at the other end of the world, as we've mentioned, are the children who aren't competing, who are just building their education platform, their ideas, developing their mental maps. They're the ones that jump into this work. If you like, they're jumping into the shallow end of the pool. They've got less education that they have to get rid of. So it's just a step out of the wading pool into the low pool, and they can begin to absorb my work without question and get their head around it. But there's nothing to stop a tenured academic professor who's almost ready to retire, and a student in a early grade school student from learning this all at the same time. What stops them from all learning it at the same time is their resistance against something, the resistance of something new compared to what they believe to be the truth as it was taught to them over their educational history or educational life. So you end up with this perverse idea, a perverse situation where the people that should be able to look at this work, they have a thorough background in physics and science and math, and see it the way I see it and go, this makes sense. This explains Schrodinger's wave equation with all the elements at a glance, or this explains fusion stars, or this explains the results for the cold fusion experiments. Now we make sense. Now we know what's going on. They're the ones that will automatically resist it the most. So I'm resigned to the fact that it will take as long as it takes people to get their head around what I'm offering them, way of a complete unified theory, because I didn't explain what I've done in chemistry is based on the foundation of quantum mechanics, and the same with electricity. It all interrelates. It's a unified theory. It covers everything. But it may be a quick, easy process, but I suspect it will be a lot longer. Max Planck actually made a quote taught in the latter parts of his academic career, where he said, basically, and I'm paraphrasing here, a new idea is not born bursts onto the scene. It normally occurs when the generation that it was given to dies out and a new generation comes along and picks up the idea and works with it. So, and this is Max Planck, the gentleman who writes quantum mechanics. He realized that when you take a huge, bold step, and that's what he did, he got classical Newtonian mechanics that had been proven to work for centuries, and said it's not like this at the quantum scale. And that was a bigger break from tradition than Einstein. It's a lot more credit and a lot more quotes about him being a genius and breaking through and creating a new theory. Max Planck was the one who stuck his head out, which ruined many an academic career. Weishman, who, and in their case, all they did was repeat the result. And then the scientists went out and struggled to replicate the work and struggled to explain the results. And if you look it up, the scientific panel that was created in the US, who eventually denounced cold fission, if you look at the wording of their theory, it goes along the lines of basically, we think they should have died in a neutron bath, given our current level of physics, current understanding of physics. And obviously, cold fusion doesn't work. And unless our current understanding of fusion processes and modern science were to be dramatically rewritten, there was no reason to believe that cold fusion could ever possibly happen. So the two scientists who did nothing more than just report their evidence, the facts of what they saw, and gave some explanation for it, have effectively been ostracized from the community, had their academic careers completely wiped away, one since passed on. They were stood in judgment of by people who didn't have a theory that could understand or explain even what they thought they could understand and explain. And they had their scapegoat was, unless science is rewritten in some magical way, again paraphrasing, they were safe. They could do that to these two scientists who'd done nothing more than just give the world the results. More energy's coming out than going in. What's happening, guys? Along comes myself, and I'm not out to beat the drum, but after a bit of study and research, I suddenly realized what cold fusion was. It's a form of fission, not fusion. And I showed that the released energy is, as we discussed in our discussion last night, there are no excess neutrons in the radioactive or in the stable allotropes and isotopes, or stable elements of chemistry, particularly palladium and all the rest. I forget the number for palladium, but whatever the palladium number, the Z number for palladium is, that's how many protons, neutrons, and electrons are in there. There is no excess number above that number to be released in a neutron bath that would kill the scientists involved. So not only do I counter the panel's reason for saying that the fusion did not occur, I give them the rewriting of physics as it's understood for both fission and fusion, as well as specifically giving them the energy levels that were produced from those experiments. But again, in the same vein, just to conclude, I am sure that that one slide, which you now have access to at the end of the chemistry ebook, if presented to a fusion or a fission expert, would probably result in his hair standing up as though he'd been electrocuted and his eyes widening up just before he scrunches it up and throws it in the bin, saying, "More rubbish from some crackpot out there." That's the way it is. There's no changing it. I chalk it down to human nature.
Connect up with that, Cal. Because science is often taken as if it is a holy book, a scripture. And it has become very dogmatic. There are many people who say that it is not scientific if it isn't written down, or what they then call proven by science, while science is in essence a recording of experimentation and the findings, sharing the findings and seeing if others can agree with that. So on the one hand, it is a personal psychological recording of experimentation, exploration of the unknown. And the other part of science is about the creation of consensus, which is a social process, social dynamic. Evidently, the individual, unique personal part of it is being curious. But a lot of what happens in science is in fact put under constraints of, let's call it, the dogma of agreements and disagreements, which is, by the way, also controlled by money. And so there's a lot of differences between those two scientists, the one who do the experiments and get to know the unknown, and the people who read the books and preach about that. Basically, it is, in my philosophy or approach, the difference between religion and a church. Religion, for me, from the old Latin word redigare, to connect, to integrate the part into the whole. While the church, from kuriake in Greek, meaning a container or a grail, is like the barrel for the wine. So when you buy a biscuit, you throw away the wrapper to eat the biscuit. And basically, that's what you need to do with the church. You need to throw away the church to get to the religion. People don't see that the same is the case in science. And so when you talk about those scientists who cannot understand because their dogma, their belief system says it should be differently, they're scripturalist, they're fundamentalist. They believe the writ. While the true scientists, they will veer up, become curious and say, well, how can you do that? How can I do that? Can I do that too? They're like kids on the playground. They want to find out as well. And evidently, sure, there is a lot of knowledge what we all have and share, which is written down in books, which are like stepping stones or scaffolding to grow further. But at the same time, a lot of these scaffoldings have become prison bars in which people are no longer able to get beyond those limitations. And what you've done is to look at it anew. You looked at the foundation, you looked at it through different glasses, you looked at it through the equilateral triangle, and suddenly everything popped up in a new focus. And you saw in depth how things connect. But the result, of course, is that you run into this difficulty in conversation with these other scientists. You will never have difficulty with the true scientists who are exploring the unknown, but you will have difficulty with those who are dogmatists and basically believe in what's written down.
Yeah.
And so what I'm trying to seek, and I think that you have that in Tetrionics, is the description for that dynamic. I'd like to connect up to something which I wrote in one of my explorations quite a while ago, which is called Scientific Consensus, in which I put that opposition as the explorer scientist versus the dogmatic scientist as a development. Basically, somebody finds something new, starts to talk with it, about it with somebody else. Out of that comes a description, a labeling, and then that is how it is, let's say, sold to the public. But what happens also is that the first person who does the research, you've done the research, you know the ins and outs of what works and doesn't work. You actually have to rewrite the books because of the new understanding. Then the people who, let's say, work in your laboratory, they see that you have been doing that, and they see that you rewrote it, but they don't quite see why you needed to rewrite it. Yeah. And they don't quite understand what the difference is between the first and the second version of the writing. Then the people in a different laboratory, so to say, they know about what's going on because they see the new publications, they replace the older one by the newer one, and they follow that as a recipe for baking the cake, but they're not quite knowledgeable on why it was written like that and what you didn't write and what you tried to write but couldn't find the right words for it. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the people who are not in your laboratory or in the other room in your laboratory, and the people who are not in the other laboratory, but the people who are outside of the laboratory, they only get mythical understanding of what you found. And I came up to this analysis because I realized that there were so many people who were talking about E equals MC squared as if they were saying something meaningful while they had never read Einstein's story and they didn't quite know what he was trying to resolve. And so they didn't know the limitations of it, they didn't know the meaning of it, and they didn't know at which point you need to replace that equation by something else.
It's important, if I can just interrupt here.
Yeah,
please. Mc squared is very much a misunderstood equation. They call it the mass energy equivalence equation, but even though they give it the right name, they don't treat it that way. And it's a big bugbear because a lot of scientists will openly admit that they know what E equals mc squared is, and they know of the formula and how to use it and things like that. But what you ask them what it says, and immediately they'll say that it's how mass is turned into energy. And that's not the case. It's simply equating mass to energy through the geometry of C squared. And if you ask them what C squared is, they can't give you an answer. And then if you say, well, if you know the equation of mc squared equaling E, what does m divided by c squared equal? And they can't answer these basic things about the world's most famous physics equation. And this is a group of people and peoples that have been studying this for over 100 years now. 1905, that paper was released. It's not that exact terminology, but E equals mc squared was in that paper. Since then, it's been known, and since then, it has been incorrectly used because it's a solution. It basically says that energy and mass are the same thing. They're equivalent, hence the name, the equivalence formula. It's not a case of converting one into the other. It's just a different way of looking at it. And it's easier to describe geometrically than it is mathematically. The mathematics is very short and sweet, but the geometric explanation basically is energy comes in triangles. If you want to take a 1 second measurement of energy, you draw a circle around it, and that circle is c squared. That's your time measurement. Anything within that circle is what you measure in time. If you have a triangle of energy, the moment you measure that and put a circle around it, it becomes mass. That's the difference between mass and energy in that equation. Matter is a completely different thing, and that's where m divided by c squared comes in, because that's the formula for matter. But modern physics doesn't know all that. I can explain it, as I did just then, and most people shut down to the explanation because it's so foreign. It's introducing geometric terms that they don't comprehend and they don't follow through. But we've built this society where, again, back to what you were pointing out, we've taken the black robes of religion and religious dogma of the Inquisition, where the black robes were the authority. What they said went, and that was it. You dare not challenge them. Woe be you if your name's Luther and you're hammering things on in the middle of the night. And we've swapped that in our modern society. We've taken the black robes, thrown them out, and we've put a whole new class of people in there with white robes. And it's scientific dogma, where they say not only will we talk like the religious ones, they talk to us using only Latin, but the new scientific one talks to us only in mathematics. And unfortunately, at least the Latin had a grammar, and the Latin was readable. The new stuff that they're writing in mathematical science, in some cases, and I'll show these cases in my work, it's in there, when you boil it down, the math says that 2 equals 1. Odds equals evens. A primary school child would laugh if you went to them and said, I'm going to show them, show you how odd numbers equal even numbers. They laugh at you. But this is what's being put to us as being fact in modern society. And it's not good. And they hide it behind the scientific, it's not principle, the scientific method, where you develop a hypothesis about an idea, you develop it, you test it, you refine it, you do some experiments to make sure that the results are there and that those results can be repeated by people, then you publish your results after revision. And a group of people will get together and see if they can build the same experiment as in the cold vision and every other experiment that's done scientifically.
Yeah. Calvin, can I just come back to you on that in a moment? Very soon the sound connection will crumble.
Okay.
And then we better continue on a new segment of the recording.
Uh-huh.
One moment, please.